Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
Hey, everyone. It's Asten Herndon, political reporter for The New York Times. When I became a journalist, I made a promise to my readers, like the way that doctors take an oath to their patients. I committed to bringing the truth to light, no matter which party, business, organization, or person I'm reporting on. I have to be persistent. I have to do research, and I have to push back when someone tries to hide or spin the facts. And I know I'm going to write stories that both Democrats and Republicans don't like. But that's what The New York Times has been doing for more than a century, and that's what we're going to keep doing. We believe the public deserves the right to make up their mind based on the facts. So if you want to support this kind of work, you can subscribe to The New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Trapaholics mixtapes.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your Eskete of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Garamonica.
Play this record as frequently as...
Pull up, bet your grill with a ski mask. Pull up, bet your grill with a ski mask. Yeah, I'm at your grill with a ski mask. Pull up, bet your grill with a ski mask. I'm at your crib with a ski. Yeah, just know I'm a barger like the heat. Freak, Owen Margiela's on my feet. I got that green picking, he still got that heat. Keep that 30 bottle on my waist. Again, now I'm a nigga, shoot you in your face. All my niggas got lawyers, we beat that case.
We beat that case, yeah.
And I keep that K right by my waist.
Right by my waist, okay.
Pull up at your grill with a ski mask.
Pull up to your podcast with a ski mask. That's right. We are here. It is SoundCloud Rap Week on the New York Times podcast. And the gang is here. So podcast this week is in two parts. First, I am joined by Roger Django and David Turner. And later, I will be joined by Adam 22 from No Jumper to talk about my time on the No Jumper tour earlier in the spring. But right now, Roundtable, SoundCloud Rap Roundtable, Roger Django of Mask Gorilla and the Unmasked Concert Series. Welcome, Roger.
Yeah, thank you. SoundCloud game Rick Rubin.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Own it. Brand. All right, everybody here is branding themselves today. David Turner, freelance writer extraordinaire, SoundCloud Rap investigator.
Ooh, investigator. I like that. Also EDM investigator. Yeah, I try
obviously,
to do what I do.
Yeah. The third chain smoker here in the building.
Yo, I'm the third one I left behind.
No. Okay, so I feel like... Okay, so I have a piece on SoundCloud Rap that I spent on and off the last 3 months working on that's out in this Sunday's paper and online now as you are listening to this podcast. This is a scene that's been developing for a year or two. Really, the long tail goes back maybe to 2013, 2012, but in its current form, really like the last 12 to 18 months. What's interesting to me about this scene, and we'll get into this part a little bit later, is I think it hasn't totally cracked the media consciousness yet. So... David, I know you pay attention. Roger, obviously you've been paying attention. There are other websites and blogs that pay attention. But I feel like in a more mainstream way, people haven't totally taken to it up until the last 3 or 4 months. We'll get to that. So we opened up with Ski Mask, which is a record by Smoke Perp. Smoke Perp is on the cover of A&L on Sunday, which that's a thing that's really happening. So Smoke Perp is on the cover. I went on tour with Smoke Perp and Lil Pump, who are both from Broward County. They are childhood friends. They are two of the bigger stars in the movement. You also have folks like XXXTentacion, who is having a bit of a troubled time on his current tour and is also facing some very, very serious charges, potentially going to trial pretty soon. Then there's also Lil Peep, who is sort of adjacent to the scene, even if he sort of was birthed out of it, is kind of adjacent to this scene and is moving in more of an emo direction. I talked to him as well when he was in town recently. Let's talk about the aesthetics. Let's start with aesthetics, and then we'll talk about some of the individual players as we go along. Roger, a thing that you said to me, which I quote in the piece, which I thought was very useful, was a lot of the framework that certainly I think rap fans and rap media would be looking at this scene through is actually not maybe the right framework. You talked about grunge rap as sort of a moniker for the movement. And I assume part of that is because lo-fi, distortion, the energy of the crowds. So thinking of what grunge was vis-a-vis like the arena rock and corporate rock of the late 80s and early 90s, what's happening here feels like a rejoinder to radio rap. Is that fair to say?
Yes, beautifully put, by the way. Couldn't have done it any better.
Okay, thanks for coming. Right.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about how you sort of identified that as the aesthetic through line. Because I do think that is the through line, even if someone like Peep is sort of on the fringes of this, right. I think the aesthetic through line still goes out to him because of this idea.
Well, I also think it's important to kind of also just give a shout out to, you know, like Sad Shallow Water Boys, mm-hmm. who in, you know, 2013, 2014, they kind of set the tone of we're rappers, but we're mosh pitting our shows and venues won't let us in. So mm-hmm. we're doing the warehouses and we're doing the Unmasked concert series in warehouses. I think they set
the
tone.
Was that your first Unmasked?
The first Unmasked was Bones and Team Sesh, which it wasn't called Sesh Hollow Water Boys mm-hmm. yet. Xavier Wolf, Chris Travis, and Eddie Baker opening up for Odd Future. So Tyler the Creator. And it was really these mm-hmm. two eras, the past and this new era, really coming.
It's like the baton pass.
Right. And to be completely honest, way more people showed up for Bones.
Hey, whoa.
Bones did it for free.
Well, you and know, burn hot, burn fast.
Yeah.
So when you noticed that this was happening from an aesthetic perspective, was it the shows that was telling you that, or was it the actual oral texture of the music?
Both, and I think they both complement each other, which uh-huh. is why it stuck around for a little bit, because it is really authentic. The music is so lo-fi and kids recording, not even on mics, just through their MacBook microphones. And then the show.
Yeah, I have my MacBook here. We're actually going yeah. to record a SoundCloud rap song at
ooh,
the end of the
yeah,
day.
Yeah, we're just
I don't know about all that. But yeah, I think, you know, the music was really lo-fi. The shows have really mm-hmm. had, you know, an underground punk hardcore feel. And that's where my whole, to circle back, is where the whole grunge thing comes from. Especially Lil Peep. Lil Peep is influenced by that, but he's also influenced, you know, he's probably influenced by Nirvana, but personally talking to him, he's influenced by like My Chemical Romance and these yes. rock yep. bands. And that whole idea of Lil Peep is going to live in the house with 10 other rappers in a two-bedroom house and everyone's sleeping on the floor and no one's making money and no one has jobs, but they're somehow scrounging enough money. That, to me, is very punk and it's very grunge. And the music is also the same. It's not like they're coming out with these hard raps. It's, right. you know, grunge
no,
rap.
No, they're grungy. They remind me of sort of classic hardcore.
Yeah. I was going to say, when I spoke to Todd Mockwitz for a story that I did on SoundCloud Rap and Rolling Stone, not to try to step on John's piece
right,
at all.
That's all right. But everybody eats.
Yes, it
everybody
is.
Eats in 2017. So, didn't always used to be the case. I used to make sure people didn't eat. But everybody eats in 2017.
So when I spoke to Todd Mockwitz, who's the head of Alamo Records, who signed Smoke Perp, he mentioned and kept referencing punk rock, being like, this feel like a very punk rock moment. Obviously, I had to like internally chuckle, not outwardly chuckle, yeah. but internally chuckle as this label head to tell me about the punk rockness of an artist he just signed.
To a major label.
But I kind of agree, like aesthetically, that is what a lot of what these artists are doing. Mm-hmm. It's very lo-fi. It's very, I honestly, when, as we were going back, like earlier today, I was like thinking about earlier artists and I was thinking of Space Ghost Perp.
Yes.
And one of the things about Space Ghost Perp is that he was putting out music in 2010, 2011, but he re-released his music in 2012. Mm. And the thing was, the re-release was, oh, I'm going to make this sound nice. And the thing with a lot of these SoundCloud rappers right now is that none of them are re-releasing their music or putting out their music again. It's still in the very distorted, lo-fi, like, kind of like grungy, I don't want to say gross, but sort of a very, like, ew kind of aesthetic to it that is very strong and very repugnant if you are not interested in it. Which I think sort of goes back to why the media might have not been as interested in it, because it's sort of like, this doesn't sound good, it doesn't look good, yeah. it doesn't have the aesthetic of something that is very, like, media ready and people are excited
it's,
to sort
it's
of
hard
jump
to access.
Into it. Yes.
So before we go any further, let's actually play an old Space Ghost Perp song. So this is off the Blackland Radio 666 release. And a lot of the folks who I talk to identify Perp and Raider Clan, which at various points has included upwards of like 15 different Miami rap right. affiliates, yeah. but identify Perp and Raider Clan as the sort of semi-official starting point for what we now are thinking of as SoundCloud rap.
Yeah.
So let's play something from Perp. Let's play Wrath of a Raider off of Blackland Radio 666.
So feel the wrath of a raider. Now all the pretty girls wanna date him, and all the jealous of this wanna hate him. The people try to fake him, but he's too smart. With a cold heart, I'm gonna be crying. I stay alive like Kevin Hart. From the start, a nigga gave him up. But I see that love was a waste of time, so I gave it up. A soda shrug, I'll shake it up. Never heard of Money Jordan, it's your homework. Make it up, break it up if he ain't make love right. Take your ass on with me and you will have a good night. Good, right? Yeah, yeah, perfect. Feel a lot better. Told me that 10 hours later, cause I got the piece of sweater. Leather, jacket all black with the Raider snapback. With the Timbs, the matches all love black. The only crew to walk around like the Terminator. Get out of line, you little bitch. They feel the wrath of a real Raider. So feel the wrath of a Raider.
Let's talk about what appears to be patient zero for the SoundCloud rap movement. Roger, can you talk a little bit about, because obviously Mascarilla has been important in shining early spotlights on a lot of the kids who end up in the piece that I wrote.
Right.
But Mascarilla also existed independent of that.
Right.
So can you talk about the year or the moments where you realize, like, this is now a movement and I'm covered, like my job is in part to highlight this thing, not just to be, I write a blog about things I like, but also like there's this scene that I want to help nurture.
So Mascarilla started in 2009 and it feels like forever ago, but at that point blogs were already, you know, on their way up and there were people making a lot of money from blogs and that was their full-time job.
Shouts to everybody making wild yaper off a blog.
Crazy.
In the late 2000s.
Getting those clicks, those impressions. Young, crazy.
Young click boy. All you young click boys.
Running around the damn private yacht.
Hell yeah. We salute you. We salute you at Maybach Music Weekend. We salute you.
Oh my God.
Throwback. Throwback. Ross wishes it was that season.
While that was happening, I on the other hand, was like, okay, instead of racing to put up the next Rick Ross song and everyone posted it, like literally over 100 blogs post the new Rick Ross song within the frame of 10 minutes.
Yep.
And who has it first? I was like, okay, there's no point in competing in this. And I'm also like a 17-year-old kid and not a big Rick Ross guy.
Hey, don't care.
I was like, let me just,
Renzel persists.
I was like, let me just, try and cover some younger guys. So that's when, my early claim to fame was I did Mac Miller's first ever interview when he was still in high school before he was signed to Rostrum and all this stuff. But Space Ghost Perp really was the tipping point of this is something so different and new and it feels so good. And I saw him at SOBs and the guy who runs SOBs, after the show, I talked to him and he was like, that was the worst show I've ever seen. And and I'm just fresh off stage, sweaty. I was like, that was the best thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
And that was a real tipping point of, wait, there's a real disconnect and I'm really going to just plug into this underground sound.
Yeah, and it's interesting because one of the things that was happening around the Perp breakout time is obviously that's not that different from the ASAP breakout time.
Yeah, the exact same
time. And what happens with ASAP is ASAP, the whole mob, Rocky obviously, but just generally speaking, I don't want to say mainstreams, but smooths out some of the gestures that Perp and his guys are bringing to the table. Or, I don't want to get too deep into the who showed up first party, but at the same time, you can draw whatever conclusions you want to draw. But at roughly the same time, there is this very kind of like dirty version that's happening with Perp. And then there's the cleaner, prettier version that's happening with Rocky and the rest of the mob. And the influence points are similar. So Perp kind of gets lost in the mix there.
Right.
At least in a mainstream.
Yeah, right. I was saying the big scheme of things, as I was looking at it, because this is still in the very post-Odd Future, the immediate post-Odd Future wave, is that you have guys like A$AP Rocky, Space Ghost Perp, and then like Main Attractions, a lot of these people who are just sort of like getting attention on blogs and you feel like aren't that big IRL. And the other thing, they're also just sort of ripping off of old Memphis tapes. And it's like, it's a very particular aesthetic that in the early 2000s, in the early 2010s, it felt like, oh, we're just doing the 90s all over again. It felt very like, oh, we're just like, oh, we're going to go back to this old thing just because it's 20 years old.
Right,
it felt it felt very derivative at the time, but it felt unique because no one had yet done it.
And like Southern Street 90s.
Yeah.
So not like Roger, you and I earlier were talking about the cool kids. Like, not like right. that kind of stuff.
No.
Like, street, like, Tommy Wright the Third.
Yeah, so I'm going to say, I was at a show recently seeing Trippie Redd, and there was someone in a Tommy yes. Wright the Third shirt at a
also
Trippie Redd
shirt.
Also was
at that show.
Yes, and he's awesome. Like, when you see that, it's sort of like, oh, someone really just knew exactly the aesthetic and reference points they were going for here.
And David, you say that wearing a Trippie Redd t-shirt.
Yeah.
The Tommy Wright the Third shirt of 2037.
I hope so the shirt lasts that long.
Yes, I'm going to come back to you in 20 years and make sure that you or your son, your fidget spinner son.
Oh, man.
Wait, you bring out the fidget spinner?
Oh,
first time
oh,
for
no.
live fidget spin. First oh, li- no. live fidget spinning oh, happening no. on the podcast.
Oh,
yo,
you hear that?
Young
you
Mad Ox, what's good?
Yo.
All right, more come back to Mad Ox. We just talk about Mad Ox all the time. we'll come back to Mad Ox later. So David's going to do the fidget spinner. Okay, so this is all happening in 2011, 2012. Because the thing about Purpose, it kind of, like we were joking a little bit, but it burns hot, but then it burns
right.
kind of
yeah.
fast.
So I think, and a lot of that contributes to one, A$AP Yams, the smartest young mind in music.
Yes.
Ever, right. maybe.
I can't say rest in peace to Yams enough.
Yeah.
Stevie, we miss you.
He identified Space Ghost Purpose aesthetic, which also was, there was this, I don't know the exact name, but there was this like goth thing also happening in New York, but he saw Space Ghost Perp doing it and then brought that to Rocky. Mm-hmm. If you watch a Rocky video before that happened, he's doing his Kid Cudi. If you watch it after, it's not A$AP Rocky, it's ASVPX Rocky.
Yes.
Very Space Ghost Perp.
Witch House Rap? Like, it's like Witch House Rap
Witch
aesthetic.
House, whoa.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's
oh,
like
yeah,
Witch
yeah.
House Rap
Rich
aesthetic.
House. Yeah.
Yeah. Witch House Goth. Yeah. Like that yeah. was also, that was happening in New York,
yeah.
but he identified that. And I think that, coupled with Space Ghost Perp, he's, you know, a zany character.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of fizzled out for him.
Yes.
Where A$AP ran with it, like you said, a more commercial-friendly version. I think at the same time, mm-hmm. Odd Future's in California are doing their own thing, doing
yes.
their very Pharrell, I'm a rock star thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was definitely a tipping point. And for me personally, when I saw them, when I saw Odd Future on Fairfax outside of the Supreme store,
yeah.
and then Mac Miller moves to L.A. and A$AP Rocky moves to L.A., I was like, okay, it's time to get out of New York. I got to go to L.A. because that's where the youth hip-hop
sure,
culture scene is.
Makes total sense. So when did this current generation start to coalesce? And not I don't necessarily mean like X, you know.
Right.
X. I mean, you know, even if you go back to let's talk Fat Nick and Puya, let's
right.
talk
so,
Simi, let's talk those guys.
I think, you know, everybody wants credit, and I think everybody gets
yes.
credit to a point. Everyone influenced everyone. I think it's the proper way would be to draw the line between Raider Clan, and
yes.
a lot of members of Raider Clan,
Denzel.
Along with Bones,
yeah.
went
yeah.
on to form Sash Hollow Water Boys. And like I said, with the first Unmasked, they picked up where Odd Future left off and kind of a harder aesthetic. Literally at Unmasked, Odd Future's manager, Odd Future needed wireless mics on their rider, and they were like, we don't want Sash Hollow Water Boys using these mics because they're going to destroy them. And he was like, that's not what Odd Future's about anymore.
Wow.
That's
right
that,
at the moment. Right
that
at the moment.
Was literally changing of the guards. That's when it started.
As we're sort of walking our way through towards current day SoundCloud rap infamy, let's take a brief detour. Let's listen to Ethel Wolf, which is Xavier Wolf, Dark Destruction from 2012.
There's pain. I know I'm off the chain, cause I can't stand it, man. Aside from where I reside, you could never hide. And the ride that I'll be inside, you could never drive. The road that I call my life, it cuts off at night. So I'll fight to avoid the bite. Killing is alright, so I might just pick up a knife, or better the rifle, and strike you, cause I don't like you. So you'll die for. It is very early, but I'm swerving, and certainly I'll be working, P. Getting every dime that I feel is worth to me. I'm getting every dime that I feel is worth to me. Aside from where I reside, you could never hide. And the ride that I'll be inside, you could never drive. The road that I call my
So that was dark. That was dark. That's a dark record.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'll be honest and say, like, in 2011, 2012, when this was happening, I didn't particularly like it all that much because it just sounded like old 3 6 Mafia records, and I've deleted my Tumblr since, but you can find plenty of me saying not too nice things about a lot of these songs just because I honestly felt they were very derivative, not all that interesting. And I think for me, being in North Carolina back then, was I didn't get to experience the live show and get to actually see these artists up close and see the actual environment and the actual people around it. So just listening to it on my headphones in college, it was like, oh, this is just old music that's being regurgitated, and that's rarely that exciting to me as a person.
Kids, delete your Tumblrs. That's everybody.
Delete your Twitter. Delete everything.
Yeah, I looked at your Twitter. You have like nine
tweets.
Let's
just keep the social media. Keep on clicking that social media.
Yeah, no.
No, use it. Keep Roger delete everything.
Yeah, you know,
keep Roger use it, but just
I'm
delete everything.
On Twitter, I'm not sure. So to his point, being in New York and seeing Radar Clan come through, live music to me is more important than recorded music.
Yep.
And that to me was, I had the opposite opinion of him, and I was like, yes,
this
like,
is the wave.
Let's go. I'm going to mosh, and like, this is what I've been waiting my whole hip-hop life for.
So, okay, so then how do we jump from this stuff, which is pretty 3-6 derivative, how do we jump from this stuff to the current wave? What's happening in between?
Right, so Xavier Wolf, Eddie Baker, and Chris Travis, early members of Radar Clan. Eddie Baker's from Ontario, California. Chris Travis and Eddie Baker find their way out there. They link up with Bones, who was rapping, but also very good, the first VHS hip-hop music video producer at that time, before it was a trend. So they link up. They end up forming a crew. That's the next step. Once they grow their L.A. base and they're like the L.A. Kings of the Underground, then Smoke Perp and Puya and Fat Nick, they're coming out of Miami. They come to L.A. They get into the scene. They do a Masquerade Unmasked show. They get into the media scene over there. They're doing concerts. They're collaborating with Xavier Wolf. And then same thing happens. Lil Pump and Smoke Perp is coming out of Miami. They come over to L.A. I think L.A. is really the hub of like where people form their SoundCloud careers. To their credit, all those dudes pay heavy homage to 3-6.
Yeah.
And Xavier Wolf has a show with Juicy J. He just did a show with Project Pat. Shout out to him on everything for throwing that show. Like, they're very, you
and
know.
If we're being honest, like, how different is this from, like, the cool kids, like, ripping off the
absolutely
ladies?
Absolutely not.
Or, you know, not. Joey Badass.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
No,
it's
not
all,
at all. It's all the same.
It's all the same. Yeah. Or, like, if you just walk down the street, kids are wearing 90s fashion. I mean, it's just cyclical and it happens.
It's all the same. So let's maybe jump up to our current moment and let us play the record that has brought us here today. Let us play Look At Me by XXXTentacion. I took a wipe to start, plus that little bitch got a throat full. I like to rock it, I'm misfit. My humor is like a wrist slit. Curly hair like I'm poor, pink. Got like three, got like I'm more, man. S*** on your man, forehead. Don't want your just one. Look at me. Look at me. Look at me, look at me, f- me, look at me, yeah, ay, look at me, f- look at me, f- look at me, f- me, look at me, yeah.
This podcast is supported by the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
This is A.O. Scott. I'm a critic at the New York Times. What I do and what the other critics here do is part of the same project that all of the journalists at the New York Times work on every day to give you clarity and perspective and, above all, a deeper understanding of the world. When you subscribe to the New York Times, it's not just here are the headlines, but here's the way everything fits together. If you'd like to subscribe, please go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
I'm not going to try and rap in that flow, but
no, thank
I'm not
going
to host the podcast in
thank
that
God.
Flow. So, okay, so Look At Me is an old record. When I talked to Jimmy Duval, who produced the record, it's more than 2 years old, I think, or the original beat is about 2 years old. And the record itself is maybe 12 to 18 months old.
Yeah, it came out in 2015.
And sort of existed on SoundCloud for a while. X, as listeners may know, and if you don't know, there's a lot to catch up on, had a very disruptive late 2015 into 2016. He is facing some very, very serious legal charges, including aggravated battery of a pregnant woman who I believe was his girlfriend or ex-girlfriend. There are documents on the internet. Pitchfork wrote a very thorough story about it. A lot of the documents are linked in that story if you want to go check that out. And I think if you're a fan of what X is doing musically,
you really should.
Yeah, you should be aware of what's happening with him in other aspects. Look at Me is, to me, maybe the most, I think someone used the word drastic in the story, but it is the most drastic sounding of the records, it feels like, in terms of sparseness and pugnacity. It's also got very, very big while X was in jail. X was in jail for several months.
Yeah.
Awaiting trial. He is out on bail and on tour now. And what was explained to me by a lot of people I talked to in the scene is when X went away, Look at Me had not broke, and he was not the most senior guy in the scene. He goes away, Look at Me breaks, and young fans love an outlaw.
It's a story of rap.
It's story a very of rap. Old story this, of this rap. You see this dating to 50 Cent, dating to Tupac. Like, this is not a new thing.
Yeah.
And Slick he comes Rick. Out and he's like a strange, yeah, he comes out as like some kind of strange quasi-folk hero to these kids. If those kids don't know about the other stuff, then that's troubling. If they know about it and they don't care, that's also troubling. But also, it sort of upended the dynamics of the scene, it sounds like, the success of this song. In terms of who's the sort of like front running characters.
Right. I think it's also interesting because through Masquerilla and through the Unmasked Concert Series, this scene is something I've been fighting tooth and nail for. And everybody from the media to booking agents to, I mean, of course, record labels ignored and almost laughed at. Then it quickly turned into, oh, wait, XXX, when we tweet about him, he gets 4,000 retweets. So we're going to start writing articles about him, and we're going to start writing articles about Perp and everyone else because we're making money from it.
When did X first cross your transom?
X first crossed my transom.
Yeah.
Via a fight video on Twitter. I mean, I knew who he was. Like, I always, you know, keep my eye and ear on, you know, like upwards of a couple hundred names at a time and just kind of like feeling the pulse. But he fought and choke-locked and choke-slammed a producer.
This is like 20, and this is 2015. This is like way before you go.
Yeah.
This is way early.
And there's a very graphic photo of this kid's bloodied face. And that's really when he started kind of, you know, making a name for himself, which is sort of absurd. And that image ended up on a t-shirt and he was selling it, which is also very absurd. Mm-hmm. But that's the first time I heard of him. And kids like controversy, and everyone loves violence, so.
Yeah, I want to say it's not funny, but I think Lil Uzi Vert will always reference Gigi Allen as being an inspiration of his, and there is very little Gigi Allen and Lil Uzi Vert.
Yeah.
Just there's almost none in it, except he likes to jump off stage. But when you look at someone like X, and you find, because these videos are still online, you can still find a lot of these videos of him fighting people when he's not even 18. He's still like a teenager in high school fighting these fight videos. And it's like, oh, yeah, this is something else. It's something darker. It's something a little different than what these other rappers who like the ASAP crew, because they would be like, oh, we want to start mosh pits. We want to do this kind of stuff. Or like Uzi would be like, want people to mosh. Or even Cardi kind of like wants to like encourage this kind of stuff. They're coming from an aesthetic angle. That's not the lives they live. That's not the actions they actually do. Mm-hmm. Where X, that's honestly a lot more what he actually is.
And if you have been following his recent tour, it seems that basically every night of the recent tour has involved some kind of physical altercation involving him either on the receiving end or on the giving end.
Right.
Yeah, there was a very infamous video that happened where he was on tour performing, I think it was a song, Garrett's Revenge, and someone just hopped the stage, sucker punched him, and then the security...
Like, tackled him. Like, forget sucker punch.
Tackle punch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, punch it was tackle. A punch going at it. But, like, so, like...
We need a new term for that.
Yeah, but he, like, punch so, tackle. I mean, like, it seems like he gets dumped on stage, and the security mob, and there's, like, a huge mob scene around this entire thing, and it becomes a huge internet moment where everyone's like, what is happening on this tour? at least in the more mainstream
right.
music
and
press.
Even before that, XXX's best friend and label mate, Ski Master Slump God, he was jumped on stage even before that tour by, we don't know who, but beef between Rob Stone's San Diego rap crew and XXX's Miami rap crew. Mm-hmm. And I think XXX rose to prominence while in jail through the Free X rallying call, which is like Free Earl times a million on steroids.
And also, Earl wasn't in jail.
Right, right. Earl got sent by his mom to some expensive private school. So I think X rose to prominence through that rallying call and through Look At Me, but mainly the rallying call. And I think this controversy of now he's fighting people and getting punched, it's a little more manufactured than people would believe. A lot of onlookers, especially media companies, want the beef and not the music.
But to be fair, so like when I was reporting this story, like I started reporting it in March. And just since March alone, a lot of really worrisome things have happened at shows involving these kids.
Yeah.
And one of them happened when I was there, which is in Seattle at the A Jumper Tour, which is Smoke Purp and Lil Pump. Someone in the audience said something to Pump, and Pump calls the kid towards the front of the stage. I think kicks a different... Now, this is... There's like 10 videos of this.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even think they beat up the right kid.
I'm cringing just hearing this.
I don't think that... I'm not 100% sure because I wasn't in the front of the crowd. But if you look at how the kid who got beat up, if you watch those videos and look how he's behaving, he's not behaving like someone who's saying F Little Pump. Like, he's behaving like, hey, man, I want to give you a pound. Like,
yeah.
You know, so I think they might have beat up the wrong kid. That's a sidebar. But the fact is, that show devolved into a huge, like, just a royal rumble. Just everybody jumping off the stage, onto the floor, punches flying everywhere, show gets shut down immediately. And that's just one night on one show. And then you look at what's happening on X's tour, you see what happened to Ski Mask.
I'm going to say, see what happened to Wi-Fi also.
See what happened to Wi-Fi.
That, yeah, Wi-Fi jumped into the crowd and got beat up, which, again, more stuff happening.
So I don't want to see kids get beat up at shows. I don't want to see artists get beat up at their own shows. I don't want to see artists punch kids at their shows.
Right.
So that started to stress me out about like, okay, this is a big scene that's important musically, but it seems to me developing in this very kind of unchecked
and
way.
And it's like really sad that this scene that's beautiful and literally gives life to so many kids, some kids who are like suicidal and this is the only thing is going to these shows and, you know, being and listening to this music. It's really a shame that's overshadowed by one or two rappers who are fighting fans.
What do you think that volatility is about? Because, look, I've been to plenty of shows in plenty of other genres and plenty of other scenes where there are fights, you know, guns get pulled. Like, you know, things happen at concerts. Like,
right.
But there does seem to be, like, a fairly intense energy that's coalescing around this movement right now.
I think it's dangerous to lump it all in together because if we're talking about somebody's actual crimes that they're facing trial for like, maybe some kid getting punched in the face at the show, they're two gravely
two different things.
But at Unmasked, at Mascarilla shows, I make it a point before the show starts, I say, I see a lot of familiar faces. A lot of you have been here. A lot of you have moshed. Some of you haven't. This is going to look more like a punk show than a hip-hop show. If you don't potentially want to get jumped on or stage-dived on or pushed, please just go to the side. There's VIP seating. We'll give you a bracelet. But if someone falls down, like, this is a community, and, like, we're going to pick you back up. So it is very strange for me to be preaching that and then, like, XXL running stories of, like, another fight broke out in the crowd.
But does it worry you, though, that it's going to tarnish the whole thing?
Well, it pretty much already has. For the time being, we're going to get over it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the article is kind of about that when it could have been about this great positive force happening. And I think we need to get past that. I think it's just kids getting really popular really quick and not knowing how to handle it. And also maybe kids who shouldn't be popular getting popular.
I'm going to say that's one of the more interesting things that I just saw in an article today on like DJ Booth that was sort of talking about Instagram and the rise of Instagram and how that is so important to these artists. And they had a couple of quotes from artists, I think it was like Lil Pump, where he was like, well, I didn't even really want to be a rapper. I just got all of a sudden a lot of attention and really famous. And it was like, well, I guess I should just do this. And I feel like that's sort of the case that's beyond music, but it's like sometimes the way the internet works, all of a sudden you're viral and you're like, oh, I guess this is now my career path. And it's just sort of adjusting to that and watching people adjust to that in real time is something that we're all getting used to in different ways, be it from a fan perspective, be it from the artist perspective, be it from the labels, be it from the media. We're all sort of playing catch up in this world where someone can go from nothing to something in a week or two, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden they have 100,000 people listening to every word, and they weren't used to that because they didn't have it even recently.
But then also what happens with that is, and this is something I touch on in the piece as well, which is people whose images grow and become more outlandish the more people are following. And I think Pump is a very good example of that. Let's actually listen to Flex Like Ooh.
Ooh, yes. Ooh. Let's do it.
Ooh. We're going to do the Flex Like. We're going to do the dance.
Hey,
we're
going to do the side song.
Moving in bricks at a bound like ooh. Moving in bricks at a bound like ooh. Diamond on my wrist ain't look like glue. Diamond on my wrist ain't look like glue. Walk in the club and I flex like ooh. Walk in the club and I flex like ooh. Missing Marcella, I love my shoe. Missing Marcella, I love my shoe. Pull up swerving in the coupe. 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 Moving in bricks at a bound like ooh. Diamond on wrist ain't look like glue. Walk in the club and I flex like ooh. Missing Marcella, I love my shoe. Made a cold bands in the kitchen. Made a cold bands while the whipping. Take it, but it go missing. Ooh, I see shot ball like a piston. Ooh, shot flash, red flare. Damn, all they do is stare. Ooh, Lil Pump really don't care. No, total bit, Lil Pump, yeah. Ooh, everybody know I'm on next.
Flex Like Ooh, great American rap record of 2017.
Honestly, favorite song right now.
Such a major record. And so Pump's really interesting, right? Pump is 16 years old, kind of only raps because Smoke Perp, who is 20 now, says to him, hey, you can do this. Like, and yeah. Like, hey, just come along and, like, let's
Lil
do
Pump
this.
Has braces.
Has braces.
Oh, my
literally,
gosh.
He's braces. And he also has pink dreadlocks.
Yeah,
and he also has neck tattoos.
Yeah, mini tattoos. But it doesn't make sense. He's still whatever. But also, he just had a birthday. Or, no, he got a million
followers.
Million followers on Instagram. Oh, yeah. And got a giant Xanax bar cake in celebration because.
Yeah, he has an amazing team around him. Really supportive.
So here's the thing, right? So I spent some time with Pump and Burp. I don't want to dwell only on the non-musical aspects of this, but there's a lot of drugs on that tour. Xans especially seem to be like a recurring thing that's popping up in a bunch of different places. It came up with Peep when I was interviewing Peep.
It's a meme at this point.
It's very much a meme.
Right. I guess in the past in hip-hop, and maybe in other genres, but hip-hop is what I'm thinking of comparison points, you maybe had guys who were just like tough guys. They were street guys. Then they started rapping.
Yeah.
Shouts to Mob Style.
I'm going to say shouts to Waka.
But that wasn't necessarily something that was known publicly or discussed publicly. Here, literally, I feel like some of these kids are internet first, music second. And Pump especially feels that way to me.
I almost say I agree. I think honestly the corollary for him is almost Lil B. Not if you remember Lil B's MySpace pages and all this work with the Pack, because obviously he's had a deep musical background. It's very influential on this moment in ways that are almost kind of a bit hard to see at this point. But I think of Lil B post 2011, 2012, where he's going on speaking at NYU, where he's going on these like big, not tour, but have one show and it's less of a concert and more of a religious experience.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what Lil Pump feels like to me, where it's not that he isn't a rapper, not that he doesn't make music. He has plenty of songs coming out and will have many more coming out. But the meme and the jokes and the sort of the fact that he will have a Xanax cake is more important than the music. Like one of his most popular Instagrams is him with a crashed Porsche. And I read an article today that was like, oh, well, you can tell he's rich because he just crashed a Porsche. And part of me was like, do you not understand that you can rent a Porsche?
Yes.
But also, it doesn't matter because it just looks good on the gram. So that's all that really matters in the end. Is that it looks good on the gram and that's all that really matters.
And I think Pump, who undeniably makes the most catchy music out of anyone. Mm-hmm. I think also, as much as he is Lil B influenced, I think he's so heavily Chief Keef influenced.
Yes.
And the first image anyone might have seen of him is him holding some sort of AK-47 literally in his mouth with the barrel in his mouth.
Uh-huh.
And people are like, oh, this is like funny and it's a meme. And we ironically call him the best rapper alive. And I think, honestly, you need that in 2017. Like, you don't get a million Instagram followers without people kind of being in it for the meme.
An important thing to understand is, you know, we are, Roger, we were talking earlier about kind of like that moment when MP3 blogs got corporatized, right? And that was a thing that happened in like the mid-2000s when it started out as people who just liked records posting records they liked, and then it became an avenue for record labels to aggressively like clog the system with songs.
Yeah.
You see that now with memes. You know, I mean, you look at a mannequin challenge situation or...
Right,
know,
I mean...
Is the unforgettable challenge, is that even real?
Like, I mean, none of these are real.
I have personal friends who are hired by unnamed record labels to literally make memes for when the album's released, and they get paid a lot of money.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I'm like, shout out to Katy Perry, who tried to have, like, I think a Bon Appetit challenge that went nowhere.
It's crickets for you.
Weird.
So what I find sort of almost reassuring about the success of Lil Pump is I know that Lil Pump is memeing himself. I don't think...
Right,
I don't
get on the joke.
Yeah, yes.
1,000%.
Yes, like, and that is, like, he understands what virality is. He understands how to manipulate his own self-presentation. And now, obviously, is it causing him to do crazier and more extreme stuff? Yes, it probably is. But also, it has an organic feel. And that's why I think, paradoxically, even though Smoke Perk's been rapping longer, I think Pump is likely to surpass him in terms of energy and attention. Pump feels like a guy who like could stumble into a top 10 record just memeing himself.
Also, we didn't really touch on him, but I think out of anyone that was mentioned in this article, Lil Peep has the biggest potential to be a legitimate pop star. This generation's Kurt Cobain.
Well, I would say, honestly, if we're speaking of remixes.
Speak it.
I would say, we're speaking of remixes. Lil Peep is one Bieber touch of God away from just being all over
everything.
Do you want
to know what I want to hear?
I do.
Lil Peep on the EXO Tour Life remix.
Woo! Oh.
10 times platinum.
Oh.
I want my points.
Oh. Atlantic Records. Give a call.
Let's get it.
Let's listen to Lil Peep, who is genuinely, like, no irony, like, very special.
Can I suggest a song?
Yeah, go ahead.
Driveway, throwback.
All right, let's listen to Old Lil Peep.
Old
Lil Peep.
All right, so that's Lil Peep. Okay, first, Lil Peep is very, very good. And, like, I know there's a bunch of people out there who know that already. There are some people who have written about Lil Peep. I feel like people are constantly shocked that Lil Peep is good. I feel like anytime someone is confronted with a Lil Peep, they're like, that couldn't possibly be good. and it turns out it's actually exceptional. So Peep has two big projects that came out in the last 2 years, I think. One is called Crybaby, one is called Hellboy. I prefer Hellboy, but I very much like both of those records. And what Peep is doing, and I think this is probably the most provocative musical thing that's happening in this world, is Peep has basically started as a rapper and now has morphed into this kind of like lo-fi rap influenced, but only in the fringe way, emo project. And what I like about Peep is a lot of people rap like they're singers. He sings like he's a rapper.
Yeah.
And that is very rare.
I'm not exactly sure if he started as a rapper.
Well, he sort of described, I mean, I think some of his early stuff was like, were rap songs.
But I think going back to his older stuff, like Lil Peep Part 1, and stuff like that from 2015, it's actually shocking that he was already doing the singing stuff before it kind of got him in the pages of Fader and Pitchfork. Mm-hmm. I think after he got the profile, it was like, to your point, he's like, oh, right, I'm a rapper. Let me kind of rap. And he put out Ben's Truck. And at the time, that was his biggest, had a million plays on SoundCloud produced by Ned Arb, the best underground producer. But he actually, he's talented. He's an incredible singer. And he really grew up influenced by rap and by emo music, like from Long Island, from Taking Back Sunday and Brand New, but also Eric B. and Rakim, not that he listened to that, but, you know, listen to probably, you know.
Oh, I think he listened to, like, New York rap from the 90s and 2000s.
Okay,
for sure.
Yeah,
and also, you know, when I interviewed him, I was like, you went to Warped Tour? And he's like, yeah, I went to Warped Tour. So I was like,
of course.
Like, you know, like, I don't actually know if, like, Smoke Perp went to Warped Tour. You know what I mean?
Right.
But, like, Peep went to Warped, like, for
Peep
sure.
Feels like a
tour.
Very authentic, actually, legitimately in high school, was depressed and actually stopped going to high school and for real locked himself in his room and had a fallout with his high school friends. Like,
yes.
Not kind of where it's popular on depressed Twitter to talk about that. He legitimately...
Sad Twitter shots today.
I'm going to say it's true, but, like, I'm going to say Lil Peep's music strikes me as a person who was not in a band in high school because he was like, those people are too cool. Those people are putting in too much effort and have too much self-start. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to step back from that.
And Peep, I think, look, he has an incredible melodic sense. This is really... I mean, I don't get too excited on Popcast that often.
Ooh, this is a
sitting
rare
up in
moment.
This chair.
Yeah, I don't get excited, but
what's,
like,
about to happen?
There is a path for him. I don't know if it's the path he'll take or the path that will be made available to him, but there is a path for him if people around him continue to move in the right direction that I think ends with him as, like, a very successful mainstream pop artist who still sounds a lot like he currently sounds.
I agree.
Yep.
And that is something that, now, it's also sidebar, Lil Peep is white.
Yes. Hugely important.
Just
can't understand that.
Like, let us also say there, Lil Peep is white. And so doing a very, you know, like, I can also say Trippie Redd is doing some sing rap thing that I find interesting. Go listen to Romeo and Juliet. But Lil Peep is white, and Lil Peep is 6'2", and Lil Peep is beautiful.
Right.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he obviously didn't invent sing rap. That's not what anyone's saying, but I think he
legitimately... Big Mo invented sing rap.
Prayers up.
Yeah, seriously.
I think he might have been one of the first ones to authentically, along with Wickedface, who was in Tiger's Jaw, like an actual emo band.
Right.
And now he kind of raps. I think Lil Peep really was on the forefront of actual emo rap or emo trap, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. When I listen to these songs, I hear what feels to me like the obvious sum total of what, if you would broadly umbrella say, like, the outsider music of the last 10 years has been.
Yeah.
This is the first stuff that I think effectively not only synthesizes it aesthetically, but also with a pop sensibility, who really has built it into something that I think if millions of people heard, they would relate to it, not just subcultural space.
And to circle back on it, it's shocking that his older stuff, when he was still in New York living at his mom's, was very similar to what he's making now. I can't stress enough how you can go on YouTube and look at the old videos with, like, his high school girlfriend or whatever. Like, this isn't manufactured. This is kind of the next wave of Taking Back Sunday and Brand New. And, you know, I jokingly say he's our generation's Kurt Cobain.
Yeah, but
which,
I didn't joke. I said it in the paper. I didn't say,
No jokes.
There we go. We're on the same page. He's Kurt Cobain.
Before we go, I want to thank Roger Django, David Turner, SoundCloud Dons for being with me today.
Thank you so much for writing a great piece and legitimizing... You know what I've been working towards.
I'm happy to do. I'm here for all the moms and dads.
I'm just happy that John's finally had this out after months of talking about it.
Damn. Wow, what a subtweet from David Turner. Cool. We're going to close out with Lil Peep, Girls. Welcome back to the New York Times Popcast. normally the coolest podcast in the world, but for one day only, second place.
Yeah.
I am joined by Adam 22 of No Jumper.
Happy to be here.
What a thrill.
This is a thrill. This is a thrilling experience.
Adam is the host of No Jumper, a very potent vlogger.
Mm.
Yeah. How you feel about that?
But being a potent vlogger?
Yeah.
I feel like vlogging has been an essential part of my documentation of my own life.
Your cult of personality.
Yeah, you know, people need to see, like, the firsthand accounts of what's going down with these things, so.
And a lot of things are going down.
Things are happening in the SoundCloud world, so.
Absolutely. So, Adam, I was on the road with you for a couple days, and as you know, working on a piece about what's been happening on SoundCloud, and I wanted to come and see firsthand, I want to say through your eyes, but next to your eyes.
Right.
What's been happening. So you had a No Jumper sponsor tour.
Right.
That was Lil Pump and Smoke Perp were the headliners.
Our first ever tour, yep.
Tell me about what made you think that what they were doing was right for your first tour.
I actually have been, like, decently good friends with them for about 7 or 8 months. Mm-hmm. You know, I met Pump when I was on vacation with my family down in Florida, and then I actually, like, snuck off to go to a rap show. And he at the time, he was opening for Young Simi and Ski Master Slump God. And, you know, we just hung out that night and got along real good. Same thing with Smoke Perp. I just met him hanging out around L.A. and stuff. Never in a million years did I think that they were going to blow up to the, you know, Lil Pump just hit a million followers. And, like, I think when we booked the tour, he was probably like 10,000, to put it in perspective.
Oh, wow.
So it's his ascent has been insane since when I first met him. So it's been pretty crazy. And yeah, I just thought that they were a good, you know, representation of the underground Florida scene that I, or, you know, not specifically Florida, but that's a big part of, like, where a lot of the stuff's coming from. And
yeah, I mean, it's the interesting thing about what's happening on SoundCloud is I feel like it's kind of like a regional scene that's passing for an internet scene.
Okay.
Because really so many of these kids are coming from the same, probably, like, zip code practically.
Right.
But it does feel like it's an internet scene, I think, from the outside looking in.
I've been waiting for the Florida narrative to emerge, like the South Florida narrative, like the way that the whole Chirac thing did.
Yep.
And I definitely think that, like, Triple X and Lil Pump, they're sort of serving as, like, the Chief Keef and the Fredo and everything sort of breaking through.
One of the things that we talked sort of at length about in, I think it was in Seattle, was talking basically that narrative dating back to like pre-X and pre-Pump, like,
right,
like going back to Space Ghost Perp and
most,
like,
of these guys,
the original.
Are to Pump, Space Ghost Perp is a weird crusty looking guy that he's, like, seen at the corner store.
Right.
Like, I've heard him tell me that specific story.
I think he said that when I was there that day.
And so to him, Perp and Raider Clan is probably way in the background. You still have somebody like Denzel, who's, like, specifically was a part of it, somebody like Xavier Wolf, but they're almost starting to look like a little bit more of, like, the OGs versus somebody like Triple X and Pump.
To people who don't know No Jumper, explain to me who comes on No Jumper. I'd say the first year of No Jumper was very focused on, like, a certain type of artist.
Yeah.
Explain who that was and how that came to be.
It was due to necessity that I was basically interviewing, like, really underground rappers. Like, I get a bunch of credit for interviewing Triple X.
Yep.
But, I mean, he wanted to do the interview with me because he knew about me from interviewing guys like Xavier Wolf and
right.
Puya. And it's not like I had a bunch of opportunities to interview bigger artists. So I just sort of, from the beginning, kind of focused on interviewing a lot of underground guys, like guys I was into. And then it sort of became like, oh, all right, this, I'm getting a couple hundred comments on this video saying I should interview this guy. Maybe I'll just, you know, look into him.
Check him out.
So it just kind of worked out that way that I'm associated with having done, you know, Yachty's first interview, X's first interview, Suicide Boys' first interview, and I'm into that.
Did you identify it right away as an aesthetic scene as opposed to just being a general underground where it's just like these are just people who aren't famous yet? Did you understand the sonic similarities of what those kids were doing right away? Or did it take a while to piece together?
Yeah, like the phrase, like, post-Raider Clan, I think just makes a lot of sense to sort of describe dudes who were interested in making darker hip-hop, possibly, like, noisier. You know, you see that with X and Lil Pump, where a lot of their beats are, you know, just the distortion being added into it. It's a very non-hip-hop thing. It just doesn't sound like anything we've ever really, like, experienced before. And
yeah,
it's being done in this really, like, brutish, like, blunt, in-your-face way. But yeah, like, when I was listening to guys like X, guys like Suicide Boys, it sort of started to come together for me that this is a very different thing that's emerging here.
Diamonds kissing, baby, how about the cool? That gets shawty, keep a strap, it's a shoe. Dumb and dumber on the molly, no rule. Shawty giving it, it's coming, oh cool. Shawty finish, that she broke off the pool. I come over, this is nothing to do. X fool, not a crip, but I'm fool. Yeah, say yeah. Yo, yeah, yeah. Say yeah. Hey, yo, yeah. Okay.
So the sense I get, and you said this to me about X, which is that people started to come to you because you became the kind of like house organ for those kids.
I had never had a label really try to talk to me before X came out, and then all of a sudden I had every label trying to talk to me and every A&R showing up trying to have a conversation. Yeah, and to me, like, the Chief Keef thing really started to make sense there. It's like, oh, this guy is actually big enough and enough of a star that he's going to make it so that everybody wants to sign a Wi-Fi's Funeral or wants to sign a Smoke Perp and stuff like that. Like, that those guys that maybe hadn't really made sense to a label system before, X made it like, oh, actually, these guys are all valid and all interesting enough.
Right. A thing that we spoke about was, like, a lot of these kids are, like, not just image first, but meme first. Mm. Like, they understand the transactional nature of the internet.
Right.
How people consume, whether it's video content or photo content or audio content, mm-hmm. and maximizing their output for each of those forms.
Yeah.
Like, oh, pump crashing the port, that's a great photo, and there's going to be a hilarious caption or a funny tweet or whatever. And that's an understanding that. That's a thing that I think if you're a rapper over 22, maybe?
You need to understand
it. You need to, yeah. No, odds are you don't understand it. And it's not native to
you. Yeah, one thing is for sure is that the music is not enough in this day and age. Image is so important, and your ability to promote yourself online is so important. So for somebody like Lil Pump, he's got a gigantic advantage being so young and so in tune. I think Lil Pump sort of became aware of rap music, like, with Soulja Boy. When you watch the videos of Lil Pump freestyling at, like, 12, he's saying Ocean Gang, which is, like, a Soulja Boy thing that he said on, like, 2 mixtapes. Mm-hmm. And I would say Soulja Boy is another clear-cut example of somebody who understood being the meme. And even now, when you see Soulja Boy beefing with Quavo, and he goes straight to, like, utilizing all the memes, I mean, come on.
Lil Pump, D-Rose.
Ooh. 100 on my wrist. Lil Pump, 80 on my wrist.
Ooh.
D-Rose. Hey. D-Rose. Hey. 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 100 on my wrist. 80 on my wrist.
What?
100 on my wrist. 80 on my wrist. 100 on my wrist. 80 on my wrist.
Ooh.
100 on my wrist. 80 on my wrist. D-Rose. D-Rose.
So, speaking of people who really understand the meme, that was another Lil Pump song. That was D-Rose. And what I find fascinating about Pump, I think, is he's so young. Because the age difference between him and Smoke Perp is like three years. It's even being on the road with you guys, it was even interesting watching the difference between the two of them. Because obviously there's an older brother, a younger brother dynamic. But also, Pump has absorbed all of this at an age where the superego that kind of like puts everything in check, like, that's not there.
Right.
Like, it with Pump, it's all it.
Yeah.
Like, Smoke Perp, I felt like, had a little bit of, like, I understand the bigger picture and, like, right. the role I'm playing, whereas Pump was just like, let's go. Let's
he's
get
fully,
it.
He's fully, he's dropped it. You're right, though. I mean, like, his whole existence is a product of him understanding what people want from him as a rapper.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, he FaceTimes me almost every day, to be honest, and I don't see a line between his public persona.
Right.
And, you know, he might be a little bit more thoughtful and a little bit more kind privately. I mean, and from my experience as a super nice kid, I'm not sure that in his mind he's ever really putting on an act. He's just having a good time.
Let's talk about the tour. So we had one uneventful night on tour, and then we had one very eventful night on tour.
You did the interviews, and then immediately after, the whole place turned into a brawl.
Mayhem.
Insanity.
There was a lot popping off. Why are SoundCloud rap shows potentially so rowdy?
I mean, I don't think anybody ever told Lil Pump, like, hey, you're not allowed to kick a fan in the face. Like, maybe he specifically needed to be told that. Maybe that's something that I should have offered him early on in the tour experience. But yeah, definitely there were a lot of people around that were not happy about that. And I mean, as a general lesson to kids who are on tour as rappers, like, nothing good can ever come from hitting somebody in the crowd. Like, you see dudes getting sued for it all the time. He's really lucky he didn't get sued for that one yet.
Because the thing that I was struck by about the audience was, obviously, overwhelmingly male, but whatever, plenty of scenes are.
Every rap show.
Right. Very young. Mm. Like, a lot of, like, 15-year-old white kids who, like, kind of wanted to throw down a little bit. And other shows I've been to with, you know, artists in the space, it's a lot of young male energy.
Yeah.
And so, and you know, you see the moshing, you see stage diving. Like, it's stuff you associate more with hardcore shows or punk shows.
I think a lot of kids.
What do you think that's about?
Yeah, a lot of kids who previously would have been into hardcore and punk, I think are really being drawn towards rap. I just did an interview with this kid, Ghost Mane, and, you know, Suicide Boys fall in the same category that they were basically hardcore kids, found out about rap a bit later, and or not even hardcore punk, hardcore metal, whatever, and that really informs their sense more so than, like, actual other rappers. Like, they might have their rappers that they like, but they're not born of a hip-hop scene, and they're certainly not committed to a certain hip-hop style. And, yeah, there's definitely just a different energy about that, you know, with the moshing going to a totally different level at shows and stuff. It's hip-hop's becoming so big that I think it's only, I think every other genre at a certain point, like, there's very clearly, like, pop hip-hop.
Yeah.
And now I think with the whole SoundCloud scene, in a lot of ways, it's almost becoming somewhat, like, punk hip-hop.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to hear rap records that are dirty right now, because that's not a thing that I feel like we've entertained in the last, I mean, you look at sort of, I mean, we're talking in the mainstream, obviously, not in the underground, but you look at sort of everything from, like, the supreme gloss of someone like Rick Ross to, like, the ultra-melodic approach of Drake.
Right.
And all of that stuff that, like, I grew up on personally, all that texture, all the grit, all the kind of, like, this doesn't sound 100% right, all of that's been stripped out of the genre. Mm. So it's interesting that it's being brought back in, but not being brought back in on some, like, 1992 rap stuff, but being brought back in through this kind of punk lens. Mm. It's not something, I mean, it's not something I think anybody could have predicted.
And if you look at, like, Lil Pump and compare it to Rick Ross, like, there's obviously the fact that Lil Pump doesn't care about lyricism or rapping in the same way that Rick Ross does.
Lil Pump, rapper, doesn't care about rapping, which is fine. It's
I ain't really trying to hear Rick Ross rap these days either. So, I mean, I think with Pump and them, it's like they understand the value of the hook. You know, to me, Flex Like Ooh is my favorite Lil Pump song.
Yep, great record.
And if you listen to the beat without listening to his vocals, like, it's so sparse, so minimal. Mm-hmm. Does not. I have a hard time imagining Lil Pump hearing that and saying, "Oh, that's what I want to rap on." And he definitely brings something to it that makes it explode into something that's a lot bigger than what the beat would lead you to believe would be possible.
One of the things that I really was sort of struggling with as I was trying to, like, tie this piece together was trying to understand not kind of what's been happening, but what the next, say, 12 months or 24 months are going to bring.
Right.
Because you're obviously going to have a mainstreaming of this idea, a smoothing out of the sound. And I wonder if you think that the current set of young stars that we're talking about are going to be the ones who are going to care. I mean, obviously, a bunch of them have major label deals, quietly or not so quietly. Mm-hmm. Or do you think there's going to just, this is going to peter out, and a next wave of rappers is going to basically be like, we can do kind of like industry plant Smoke Perp records, or we can do industry plant Triple X records. Where do you see that going?
I mean, I really don't want to hear, like, the industry plant version of some of those guys, and I hope the kids aren't stupid enough to fall for it, hopefully. It's kind of scary for me to think about, like, what the next version of Lil Pump is, or how that will look. I don't know. Is that Matt Ox?
Hey!
Yeah, but you already wrote about him a little bit.
A little bit, you know. I left my fidget spinner at home. Sorry, guys.
But Matt Ox is still the clean version of Lil Pump because he's not swearing. There's no drugs being referenced or anything.
Shouts to the Young Bull.
Shout out to Matt Ox, who's currently hacked. You got to really feel for the kid
seriously,
right
first
now.
Free Matt Ox's Twitter.
Free Twitter, Matt Ox's Instagram, SoundCloud.
Free Lil Peep's Instagram.
Lil Peep is suffering as well right now.
God.
When I'm rapping, ooh, we many killed it. Met us in a building, about to break the ceiling. I don't think you feel me, am I too overwhelming? Posting in the trenches, yeah, that's where I'm flexing. Feeling what I'm rapping, ooh, we many killed it. Met us in a building.
You listen to somebody like Uzi when he says, like, I'm a rock star, and then you have people, old heads in the hip-hop world, trying to parse, like, is he a rock star? And it's like, that's not really what he's saying. What he's saying is he doesn't want to be judged by your criteria.
Exactly.
He doesn't want you to say, hey, you're not as good as Jadakiss.
It's, like, it's not the point.
What Jadakiss is doing. Exactly. That's that's like telling Minor Threat that, oh, you're not as good as the Beatles. It's like, yeah, we know.
Well,
we're not trying to be that.
And again, it's so interesting to be in a point in hip-hop media where some of the old guard is now the people who are sort of saying, yes, you're allowed in, or no, you're not allowed in. That's so bizarre. Because, like, I think coming up as a young person in hip-hop, whoever the old people were, we were always skeptical. And so you would think anyone who went through that themselves, who was a rapper in their early 20s and knew what it was like to get mistreated or misjudged to then become the person who does the mistreating and the misjudging seems like awfully short-sighted.
I mean, like every age of hip-hop is going to look at the next generation after them and be like, oh, they've lost their way, and that's to be expected.
But it didn't have to be like that, because hip-hop as a genre versus rock or mainstream white pop culture has always been on the wrong side.
Right.
So you would think there would at least be a little bit more forgiveness within the space.
Yeah, but I feel like those dudes who were looking at UGK and saying, oh, that's not hip-hop,
yep,
they're probably now looking at Lil Pump and being like, well, I wish we had given UGK a little more credit, because things have gone in such an anti-lyrical direction in a lot of ways. And it's just about dudes not wanting to have to be constrained by those limits of their predecessors, you know, and if you look at all these guys, they're all embracing it.
And also the thing that these kids are so good at is creating, like you said, creating this cult of personality around themselves. And even, you know, in the case of someone like X, with some real baggage attached to it.
I feel like they all are aware of that, of the fact that they are bigger than their music. You see that big time when you go to shows. I'm not going to say X as an example, because I feel like the kids actually do know the words to all his songs. But a lot of these guys, you'll go to the show and you'll think like, oh, these kids are actually like fanatics of these dudes. And then they don't know the words to the songs, like in large part
in
the audience, because it doesn't even matter to them, to the audience, a large part of the audience. Yeah, it's not about the lyrics and it's not about the music as much as it's about that live experience. The same way that I could, again, bring it back to hardcore, where hardcore, you can't even understand the words most of the time.
But you want to be in the room.
And the fans still want to be there. It still has a feel to it. Yeah.
So maybe you should throw like a, you know what the Black and Blue Ball is?
Yeah.
Maybe you should throw the Black and Blue Ball, but with all these kids.
I mean, I've been thinking about that because I've been hanging out with a lot more hardcore bands lately, and it just keeps occurring to me like, oh man, it just seems so obvious that I should probably try to fuse these two a little bit more than they have been.
Okay, and that's this week's podcast. I want to thank all my guests, Roger Django, David Turner, Adam 22. Before we go this week, I want to acknowledge an artist who was incredibly important to me growing up, who passed away this week, and that's Prodigy of Mobb Deep. Prodigy was an unflashy superstar. There was something almost brick-like, foundational about his presentation. He's never been one of the gleamiest rap superstars out there, but his voice is indelibly part of the essence of New York rap. It's so familiar at this point, it sounds inevitable. And I want to honor him by going out this week with Keep It Thorough. R.I.P. Prodigy.
Hey, yo. I break bread, ribs, $100 bills, peel on Ducatis and other four wheels, write a book full of medicine and generate meals, tour the album only for more sales, we used to catch those on the block with Krills, now it's paid shows, promoters post up bills, sign deals only if the math is real.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. You can listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us your favorite Lil Pump song at podcast@nytimes.com. Subscribe to the podcast, which you should definitely do, at Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you get your audio content. Our producer is Pedro Rosado, and we are back next week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.